Nigeria Radio, bringing Nigerians in diaspora up to speed.
Affects our daily living, and my main aim is to bring about behavioral modification and a change in mindset. And every Sunday, I try to bring in different people to talk about issues that happen to us, like on our everyday life. And we try to let other people see that, you know what, even though things go on, sometimes without you knowing the other side of life, you might just think it's only you it's happening to. This special edition of November being my birthday edition, I really wanted to talk about issues that people generally misinterpret. That's why I made November to remember, because I wanted people to know that, you know what, sometimes we run along with things without actually looking at it from another aspect. This is why I'm going to look at today to round up November to remember perceptions and interpretations. And who else do I have in mind to be able to like break this down for us than no other than a friend of mine, a big brother, somebody I would actually call a realist, because being as it may be, I know him to say things the way they are. He had a video that trended for so long. I wasn't surprised that that video did trend, because I know him to be that kind of person. He's no other than my big brother, Tunji Ido, popularly called PT. Hi, Tunji, how are you?
Hi, Laura. Good to be here. Thank you for having me.
Okay. Yes, you sound a little bit down. Are you nervous?
No, I'm pretty good.
It's me. We're just going to talk. Okay.
I'm still booting.
Okay, you're booting. Okay, maybe this is your radio voice. And I can bet this particular edition, I know a lot of people are going to be tuned in, because I mean people
know
you for you to say it as it is, which is a very good aspect really. But before we dive in and before we start taking questions, can the listeners know a little bit about you?
Oh wow.
Okay.
Okay. My name is Tunji Idowu. I guess one word to describe me adequately will be versatile, and that's because I'm probably juggling between two worlds, two spaces, either simultaneously or concurrently, and that's been the story of my life. As an example, my day job, I work for two connected organizations. I head a not-for-profit, it's called Foundation for Partnership Initiatives in the Niger Delta, which is a non-profit. But the parent organization, and I established it, is a for-profit, which is Chevron, the oil and gas company. But at the same time, I have my non-paying job, which is like I'm involved in ministry, and I have two home churches, as it were, but I relate with people across the world in various ministries, whether set churches or other not-so-formal ministries. I shuttle between two homes in Lagos and in Abuja, and it's less now. There was a third one out in the UK. So I'm juggling both, and that means you've got to keep abreast of developments on all those fronts simultaneously. Even in the ministry, I juggle between two churches, sort of between Lagos and Abuja. And I have been privileged to have walked and lived in at least two continents. I think my children do better than me. They have added a thought to it. And having also managed global diversity in another life, it allows me to have lenses into cross-cultural issues. And I've been fortunate to have traveled. So the extensive travels that I've had also shaped my world outlook. So except for my value system, I don't hold tightly to things because I can understand various viewpoints around issues. I don't like to talk about myself too much, so I think that will suffice.
Okay. Now let's, because I know that today I want to touch on so many things so that people can have things to go away with, things to remember. Like I said, my main aim as a psychologist is I love to bring about behavioral modification. I like to change people's mindset. And right now, a lot of mindsets need to be shifted. Because people will call it maybe shaking the table, but I just call it we need to shift our mindset about the way we think about things, the way we see things, and the way we actually just process things generally. So one of the first questions I'm going to ask you today is, we're going to talk about that trending video, and I'm very sure that is one question everybody wants to talk about, the trending video about the COVID thing. I know that for one, a lot of things have been said about COVID. Some people have said it from different ways. Some people have added the Yoruba version to it. Some people have added the European version to it. Some people have added the racist version to it. There are just so many versions flying around. And I know you know right now that there's a new variant that is going on. And again, I just thought about it this afternoon that, oh my word, I was just going to talk about this, and then this new one is coming up again. Only God knows what's going to come up with, what theories are going to come up with this new variant. So what necessitated your having to talk about, the perception of people and the interpretation of the vaccination when you did?
Oh, thank you, Lola. That's a lovely question. The truth is, I didn't plan to talk that morning until I was sitting down during worship just before I stood up to preach. But of course, I don't exist in a vacuum. We've all been around discussing these things. I was very initially, I know enough about the pharmaceutical industry in the US and the dynamics. I also understood certain things, so I wasn't going to take the vaccine almost immediately. I said, let it run a while and let's see. And in any case, it wasn't immediately available for us to use in Nigeria. But I had no qualms about some things. We've all been involved in different debates and different platforms at home and all that. But what bothered me was that a lot of people were playing up the fear factor, and a lot of people were saying no, but they were not adducing other alternatives and they were not preferring solutions. It was just a fear factor. And I've been around long enough, I've been around the church long enough to also know that, hey, some of us have weapons of mass indoctrination. We just want to keep people in check and all that. And I could see some of that also going on. We've seen some of the examples in previous conversations around other topics, whether it was about tithe or offerings and relevance of the church, where church people get unduly emotional and undertake emotional blackmail rather than really standing scripture for scripture and getting their points across. So it was some righteous indignation that morning. I think the hand of the Lord was just upon me, yes, just before I pretend. I just got up and it was like, guys, I need to come clean also because I was one of those who were the vaccine breakthrough cases. I had taken the vaccine, completed my second dose, I think, a month earlier before I then caught it. And I know I caught it out of some overexposure and also low immunity because I was overworked and all that. But I also had, about, as I said in the video, a number of activities over a weekend. So it wasn't at my best, but I let down my guard. And it was only nice to be clean and come clean with your audience and also relate with them because you've got to personalize things. Too often people think those who stand up there, who pastor, who preach, who teach, or who do those things are superhumans. We're not. We're normal like everybody. We bleed like everybody. We get tired like everybody. We get tempted like everybody. We eat like everybody. Nobody does anything differently for any other reason. And so he will say that, and that's been the feedback that, oh, thank you for sharing, because we can put a face to it. I didn't expect it to go viral. It was meant to be a conversation with the local assembly. And then he kept coming 20, 40, 30 times back from Australia or some other end of the world. I'm like, oh my word, then God must be up to something that he wanted to use this for. And so that's what led to that.
I'm very happy you touched on the fact that you use the word like doctrine, and that is what I used to say. That at times, you know, when we do things, it's actually very intelligent of some of us to be able to look at things, you know, from a different dimension and not just look at it in from black and white in just one lens. You understand? Look at it from different points of view. Like, for example, when you talked about the fact that, you know, the church indoctrination, which is something we're going to get into later, you know, during the course of this interview. One of the things, let's go back to this COVID thing with a new one out now. What's your take on it? And how do you think, I have my own reserved opinion about it. And I don't want to talk too much because I would say maybe because it's personal, you understand, when people are going through situations where you're kind of not having physical and emotional connection with loved ones anymore, it starts to tell on you as a human being. You know, that aside, so that's an emotional feeling. But now the logical feeling about this new variant, and I was on a forum yesterday till very late having a very serious argument with somebody, and the argument was that, you know what, we need to read things very well and assimilate what that message is trying to tell us before we just say things. You know, everybody's screaming now, oh, South Africa, South Africa. And I'm like, what are you guys talking about? That is not what it's saying. So what's your view on that?
I think because there's politics running through everything, you're going to have people play games. People do all sorts. And if you don't control the gates, and I talk about gates in terms of who controls governance, who controls entertainment, who controls education, who controls the media, it's whoever controls the gates that influences, that determines, that shapes the course of things. That's why you're jostled over a lot of those things. The truth is that the Western world has controlled the media for long. It's not until the last decade or so that other parts of the world, starting with the Al Jazeera media and then the Chinese TV and also, started projecting alternate views. Prior to that, it was BBC, VOA, and all CNN and all those guys that dominated the landscape. Now you get to hear other views. There's still part of that in this whole discourse around the pandemic. And it's very easy to stigmatize Africa and gloss over a few things. There are still those who don't think we are knowledgeable, or that they don't realize the extent of the level of medicine in South Africa, and especially, and all that. They don't understand how well we did beating Ebola when the US was still struggling and they had to send people to come and learn that from Nigeria. So people are still stuck in those old narratives and all that. But back to the controversy that started from last year, or from December 2019 with Wuhan, the truth is that the protocols that have been prescribed are the time-tested ways of looking at things. However, the last pandemic was over 100 years ago, the global one. I mean, you've had other regional ones. And it's not looking like the way things have changed, you are having those things less effective than even before. The truth is, nobody has the answers. Even this Omicron one, they have more questions than they have answers. But they've just jumped on a few little points and are muddying the waters. People need to stop that, step back, really wait till you learn enough and then know what to do. But politicians will always think of scoring points. They will always think of the next election. They're going to do what is populist and not necessarily what is hinged on science. And so you're going to see presidents and prime ministers scrambling to do funny, funny things, but they just don't make sense. It's just that people find it tough not to do anything at all than to just go and do something and it might be the wrong thing. That's part of what's going on here. But we need to wake up, smell the coffee, and be sure that we don't buy into the wrong narrative and we say things that are more suited to reinforcing our own image than just thinking that whatever comes out of the Western hemisphere must be the global gospel truth.
Yes, exactly, and that is exactly my point of view too. You know, talking about this one, I think one of the major things, and that is one thing I want to ask you as a person that is a grown adult, a father, because I'm very sure your children must be going through it. What do you feel about this social media influence in this new century. I think it's, I mean, I know I don't have my way, but if I had my way, I'm actually going to ban social media. Wala is just too much. Because you see, people just...
The trouble is too much.
The trouble is too much. They just run with things. And before you know it, they just take things out of context. I mean, you will see an accident situation. Instead of people running to save the people, they're taking videos because it's who is the first person to post it. You understand? It's like we're losing values. So what's your take?
Lola, my take is that like everything else, social media can be good or bad. Remember when people thought television was the devil's box? And all that, and people thought the internet was going to be the way through 6/6 to capture all of us. And some people splitting hairs over 5G not too long ago. Yet we were transmitting on equipment powered by 4G and 5G and all of that. So the truth is, everything has its good uses and it can also be corrupted. Social media has given voices to populace that will otherwise have been crushed by their governments that are intolerant, because you don't have to step out like you had at the Tiananmen Square, one man standing in front of tanks. You can just use your social media to put pressure and demand accountability. Unfortunately, at the same time, you have those who have created a new industry of fake news. So there's a lot of fake news going around. Some people are using it to drive traffic to their sites and their blogs so that they can trend and they can have more followership and have more money. Others are just what I'll call conflict merchants and agent provocateurs. There are political parties who have an army of these people who are going to be trolling you and doing all sorts. So I won't blame social media because it's just a platform. It's how we now use the platform that's the issue. But my basic rule and the rule that I advocate, and a lot of the groups, I belong to several groups, old school, men, church, security committees in the estate, different workplace, different ones. And one rule is that if you share something, then you own it. We try to enforce zero tolerance in groups. So you can't just say you're forwarding for forwarding's sake. You are better cross-check. And in many of the groups where I belong, there are those, for those who understand football, the video assisted referee, there are those who everything will be VAR checked. And if you're wrong, you're going to look like the class clown, because they're going to come all over you. So maybe you do it first time, second time. After that, the groups I'm in, which I mean, people are extra careful to double check and do the due diligence before they share, because we're not going to tolerate it. Fake news has led to wars, attacks, deaths in India and many other parts of the world. So it's not just harmless. It's not just, I'm just sharing it. I have a relative, a sibling, who I've said in the past, I'm just sharing just in case. When we were all over, my sibling learned to back off and not just share for sharing's sake anymore. So do your due diligence. There are websites where you can cross-check these things. Snopes.com. I'm not doing advert for anybody. Urban Legends and all of those things. And then there are also websites where you can cross-check pictures on Google and all of those things. So people just need to know. So before you forward, double-check so that you're not passing on fake information that can be hazardous to the health of others, whether it's their mental well-being, or it could also lead to physical violence.
Yes, I'm going to go Nigerian this time around. I think most of the time, as most Nigerians, they have this attitude of, you know what, I want to be the first to send the news. No, I'm honest with you. Like, I was reading an article.
They want the scoop.
Yeah, it's like the one. I mean, I don't know if they're being scored or something. I was reading an article and the guy said to me, he learned about his sister's death on social media, exactly, you can imagine that kind of trauma.
It's got to do with responsibility. It's irresponsible on some people's part. I mean, I had a friend younger than me who passed recently. I was in touch with her family, and even though I made a post, because she was one of like three bereavements at that time, I couldn't put the name until I was sure they had visited the daughter and broken the news to the daughter, because I wasn't going to put a name or a face out there. It wasn't until I considered that I could then pay my tribute. We just need to be responsible. I think part of what's happened is that with all the technology, a lot of us have become jaded. Our sensitivity is gone. We are now very impersonal. It's like all those mass murderers, they played video games where they've killed people repeatedly. So when they then enact it in real life, there's some disconnect. I'm here a psychologist, so there's that disconnection with reality. They're jaded. They don't really see those things. And those are some of the things where, as parents, we've got to be careful what we expose our wards to and how, at what age we expose them to. There's a lot of violence. The things that were regarded as PG 18, 16 in our days are now being passed on real early. And parents have got to be careful. There are even things that are P13 that when you look at them, you realize they shouldn't even be given to a 16-year-old. So you've got to be vigilant. You've got to shield your child and not worry about joining the Joneses, because the Joneses are broke and the Joneses are in trouble. Why do you want to join them? Chat your own course. Do what's right for your child. I know people wouldn't give their children smartphones until a particular age. Just give them a dumb phone to be able to call you and be able to text and reach them. You don't have to live. And then if you're going to allow those ones, also put safeguards in place and have some boundaries. Part of the terrible parenting today is that we don't have boundaries. We think if we don't do certain things, we are less than other people. It's wrong, and we're having disastrous consequences on account of that.
Oh, I'm actually laughing here because as a psychologist, when people tell me, oh no, why don't you do children? And I said, because there's a lot of bad parenting out there. And unfortunately, I'm somebody that is very transparent with my emotions. I mean, it's written all over my face. So when a child, I never blame the children because they are not bringing up themselves. I always blame the parent. Yeah, the child is not responsible for himself. If the child could choose between wrong and good, I definitely know he would choose good. But unfortunately, right now, the buck goes back to the parents. But it goes back to a question I'm going to ask you before, and then we're going to elaborate when we come back from our musical break. And that is the fact that, you see, one thing I noticed about Africans, especially we Nigerians in this thing we call the abroad, sometimes we don't do things the right way because we use the word because we want to belong.
Mm.
And that is part of bad parenting. I mean, for example, when I was growing up, if you as a parent were trying to correct my child about something, even if I don't agree with you, I would just, you know, we would both be on the same theme for that. But I would not disagree with you right in front of the child. Like, for example, I was with a friend and the friend was trying to tell the child, oh no, don't play football on the pavement because you can hurt your toe. And the father answers immediately, no, let him play it. I would paint the wall if it gets dirty. And I would look at it that,
no,
that's not right. That wasn't right. Because now what you are teaching that child is the child only listens to the parent. So it goes back to the fact that when an adult outside talks, that child may not listen. And the parent doesn't know, they've passed a wrong information to that child. So, I mean, what do you think of that? As a parent and as somebody that has lived both sides of the world?
Thank you, Lola. Good question. Yes,
I'm going to be a taskmaster today. I'm going to drain you. Every question.
No worries. When we were growing up, I mean, that old saying was very relevant, that it takes a village, a community to raise a child.
Yeah.
And if you were corrected by the neighbor or one of your neighbors in the community, you dare not go home to complain because you're going to get double punishment. And most of those other people who corrected you or disciplined you didn't even have to come back and tell your parents because they knew you would be double. But they've done their part and they've gone. So that was how we were raised. The world's changed a bit. It's gotten more dangerous. And so some parents have gotten into panic mode. And so they're shielding their children and not allowing, because again, when you look at a lot of the cases about abuse, it's often some of those clues as well. So some parents on account of that have done that. But even if you go and do that, the example you gave, I don't think it was nice of the parent, because someone was talking about the care of the child and he was replying, based on paintings.
Material things, exactly.
Material things. But, you know, again, while we're living in the U.S. and we lived in California, I know there was a lot of investment, and it's still going on when parents invest in their children, hoping they'll make it through sports. For some of those in the Black communities, the poorer Black communities, and it was the meal ticket out of poverty. And so the child could do well in sports and all of that. But it came at a price, and at a price that a number of Nigerians that had emigrated out there struggled to adjust to. Because back home, the schools take care of homework and all that, and at best you can have a lesson teacher. In the U.S., you're spending hours being involved, even though you've paid for school, you're still being given homework where you, the parents, are the co-teacher. I used to be out on the East Coast 3 hours ahead of the West Coast and doing homework around 11 p.m. Other times I'm in Asia or some other part of the world, and I have to do homework because it was division of labor. My wife took care of English and math was passed to me, and one of the twins would not let me rest. She would hand me. So I'd have to close early and make sure I have free time to do that. Balancing those things are important. It's quite important for us. You cannot then want to parent your children in a way where you lose sight of some of the things you brought from home. Yes, put the safety measures in place, but don't let those child think they are only tied to some narrow way and they miss the rest of what they are able to avail themselves of. And I think that's part of what's trickled down, because what you see in parenting is also likely to be reflected in the marriages and in the power dynamics at home and the relationships. So part of that is what people are going to really have to look at. But every home has got to define what works best for them, but you've got to be relevant to the context in which you find yourself. You cannot be in the U.S. and they try to parent like back home, or vice versa. You've got to be relevant in your context.
Okay, I'm happy of what you said right now. But as soon as we come back from our music break, we're going to go on that, and then I think I'm going to take maybe one question this evening, because I need to get more information out of you. We're still on Real Talk with Lola on Spirit of Nigeria Radio and Live Radio 107.5 Ibadan. And my guest is still Tunji Idowu. As soon as we're back from the musical break, we'll elaborate more on some touching issues that I would really want to be talked about from a different perspective. Okay, we go on a music break now.
Biggie, 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 biggie. Biggie, 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 biggie.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know how to describe you. I don't know how to explain you. If I say you good, you are more than good. If I say you nice, you are more than nice. If I say you awesome, you are more than that. The only way I can describe you. I came to you so dead.
came to you with all my sin. Now you make my life
robust, robust.
My back I can't think of.
Robust, robust.
You make my ministry
robust, robust.
My family.
Radio 107.5 FM Ibadan, and my guest is still Tunji Dowu, and we just came back from a very nice musical break. And yes, am I gingered up? Yes, I am gingered up to ask Tunji more questions.
And
as I said today, my questions is not like maybe based just on one thing. It's going to, like I said, it's just going to be on perceptions and interpretations. We've been able to touch on two major aspects which has been very dear to me, but one of the things I want to touch talk about right now with Tunji is, Tunji, I know that you are very grounded in the Nigerian culture. I know you as a person, so I know what your beliefs are, and I know you've lived overseas, so I would say you are in a position to answer this particular question. I've been wanting to look at, to ask somebody who has, you know, lived in both worlds and be able to like kind of break it down for us. You see, one of the things I used the word a wannabe, and what is a wannabe for us psychologists? That is somebody that is, you're not black, you're not white. You're just, you know, you're just dangling in between. You understand? And even the Bible actually says it, that, you know, you have to be either warm you need to be either cold or hot. You can't be lukewarm. You need to pick a side. And what am I talking about? I'm going to talk about religion soon. But first of all, I want to ask you a question, which somebody sent in and which I wanted to ask you anyways. And that is, the question is that it says, why does marriage and religion always become a conflict in most homes? As a pastor, now I want you to step out of the pastor zone now and talk to me one-on-one. Why is there always a conflict? Is it that people misinterpret what it's supposed to be, or they don't understand what the Bible is trying to say? Let me give you an example. You will hear some women, there's some things we can't see on radio, but you will hear some women tell you things like, you know, they can't perform their marital duties. I mean, you know what I'm talking about, because they are fasting. So, what's your take?
Thank you, Lola. If, I'm trying to get what the exact question is. So, if you help me, I want to be sure I don't go off point.
Okay.
But I hear you saying, okay.
The exact question is, why does religion most of the time always play a role in problems in some marriages? Is it because one party is not understanding it very well, or one party is overdoing it? What is it?
Okay, so I think you're narrowing this specifically to Africans and Nigerians.
Yes, I am.
Okay, thank you. Good question. It's a challenging one. I don't think I have all the answers, but I'll give you my own impressions, my own perspectives on this. I think first, and I speak majorly from the Christian perspective, but let's step back to our culture.
Good.
The way marriages were consummated in the past, the way we go around things, it involves, the larger family involves the community. But let's even leave marriages. When you look at the pecking order and you look at the place of women in our culture, even though we have a lot of you who have succeeded well, a lot of you who are out there, you're still in the minority compared to the bulk of the women who are still majorly seen but not heard. And this is not unique to Nigeria alone. Women are still lower in the pecking order almost globally, even in the U.S., where you still have certain parts where women don't really have that much of a voice. Don't forget, it wasn't too long ago in recent history that they had the ability to vote, the right to vote, not too long ago. It's less than 100 years. So you have that. And that's why even in trafficking, it's majorly women that are trafficked. Just for some crazy reason, women get the short end of the stick. However, especially in Africa, when traditionally men have, I mean, even still now, men still have the voices. There are still certain cultures where women are disinherited. Women are suspects, number one, when their spouses pass on, and they're taken through certain rites and initiations that are there. So some of our men still carry that mindset and forget that when you come into marriage, and especially when you say you marry as a believer, as a Christian, marriage makes it clear that you are partners.
Good.
You're not, it's not a master-servant relationship, it's a partnership. My wife will joke, and a lot of other people will say it, that if the man is assisting, is the head, the woman is the neck. And guess who turns the head? It's the neck. If you don't want to have a neck, a pain in the neck, you better cooperate. The head and neck had better cooperate. But a lot of us want to macho up and do a lot of things. And a lot of our women over the years also have been subservient. And that's regardless of religion. It's just culture. Now, when you then come into some places, I mean, in Islam, the little I know, that you don't even sit together, you don't worship in the same space. You are, there's also the man is put up. When people come into the church, into Christianity, depending on the emphasis within the organization in which you are, is either you are, women are elevated and they realize that they're not going to be subjugated, but they are still taught to respect. And that means defer to their husband and give him his respect, but it's not meaning that he should become a servant. Or you might be in some of the more traditional ones where the men are lifted high and they're beating women on the head with the baton of submission. And that's often one-sided. When I minister at weddings and I have to be the one to share the exhortation, I don't spare. And in counseling, premarital counseling, and in even marital counseling, you don't spare people in realizing that that scripture that people like to lift out of context, if you back up one or two more places and you look at the entire context, it's talking about mutual submission. Parents also submit to their children. Children submit to their parents. Bosses submit to their subordinates and vice versa. The Lord is not a wicked God. So you've got to look at that in context. However, the influence of culture plays a big part, and especially the extended family issues play a big part. And so when people then come into certain religious circles, it's either it's compounded or they're seemingly liberated, and then you have a little bit of a power jam, except the couple together buy into that and they can shape this. But there are even times when they do that, but then they have to start playing like actors. They have to act like they are acting in a movie when they have relatives around. It takes very confident people and who are comfortable in their own skin to say, this is how we're shaping it. We're comfortable, we're okay, and it doesn't threaten your own setup, but can you please let us be and we'll shape our own thing?
You know, I'm happy about what you said right now, because you see, I think you've actually just basically said, without you saying it, that as Africans, culture plays a major role in our marriages. It does. And that is why I always say to people when I counsel to that, you know, sometimes when you see marriages overseas that are having problems, I always look at it from a point of view that, you see, the men want to be a Nigerian man with an European mentality. You need to make up your mind. And what am I talking about? I'm saying when you start to do some basic things, I mean, I'm a woman. That is just how some of us were molded. You know, we like to press buttons. You try your luck. You understand? You would put in front some things, and if the man, like they say, he falls for it, oh good, then you try something else the next time. You introduce something more. and then at times it can go south, you understand? And then that is why they say, and that is how the problem started. At the end of the day, that is how the problem started. And that's how the fight started. So, you know, what am I trying to say? You looking at it from a different aspect now, do you put the blame more at the Western way of living, or do you put it at the Nigerians not trying to hold on to who they are and trying to be who they are not when they go overseas?
Thank you, Lola. Interesting question. I won't be putting a blame at anyone in particular, except we are dealing with specific context. But I think, I take this back to my job, my job in a different life. When I was managing diversity at Chevron, part of what Chevron will do, my will, is prepare expatriates for the country in which they're going into. And so sometimes out of the U.S., when their people are coming into Nigeria, I'm invited in to give pre-trip, pre-assignment briefings. And part of it is to prepare them for the differences in culture. The Western world, generally speaking, is deemed individualistic, while the rest of the world is a little bit group-oriented. And some of those things on the cultural milieu. So you kind of help to identify and prepare people. It's the same thing when people are leaving Nigeria, Africa, for the Western world, they're kind of prepared. But I understand that's organizational resources at play. Individuals don't often have that. When we were leaving, it was very evident to me that visiting is different from when you're living somewhere. You can be visiting, but when you go live there, it's a different ballgame.
It's a different ballgame, yeah.
So we needed to invest in personal resources besides what the organization was going to provide us. It's the same thing I would tell people. When a lot of Nigerians were checking out, I said, I always tell some of the younger ones when they come in, be careful, be prepared. Some of them want to send their families abroad and stay here. And I know that their relationships were not that strong to be able to weather those storms. It's like, what are your trade-offs? What are you going to do to make up for this sacrifice you want to make? So you need to be prepared. Therefore, when you're going abroad as well, you need to understand where you're going to prepare for that. How are you going to raise your children? What are those dynamics? We knew suddenly we're going to be co-tutors at home, and we also had to put in hours as part of community service in school. There was a minimum number of hours you needed to go and do. To show up, depending on the school you went to. So you had to be careful with your choice of school that your children were going to attend. If you didn't have the time, you better not go to some of those schools. If you were not prepared, better not do some of those things. So I won't blame the context. I'll blame how well you take. I mean, you can go in and take the good point parts of a place and leave. I never got comfortable, and my wife and I, we never got comfortable with credit. I mean, when we moved, we were well in our 40s when we traveled then. We had been raised for almost four decades not operating a credit system. And then suddenly, for you to have a good score, you've got. So it was a bit of a struggle, but then you had to learn how to play this well and make sure you were not shortchanged because you didn't have good credit and all of that. So you pick part of the good and you leave out the ones that are not going to work for you. When couples then go, they can't go and want to do a little bit this way, a little bit that way. You've got to find synergy. And one person can't go rogue wanting to go native Western while the other one is holding to be traditional. There's got to be a meeting of the minds. Otherwise, you're going to have dysfunction. And there are well too many stories and too many cases of that happening.
It's like you just actually spoke my mind, and I tell people that is one of the many mistakes a lot of some people make. Let me say a lot of people. That's one of the many mistakes some people make. You know, when you come to the Western world, a lot of things are like it's like you've been in a candy store. You know, a lot of things are thrown in your face. It's like it's all over the place. It just confused at times. And I always advise that, you know, sometimes you just need to do like an out-of-body experience with yourself. Step out of your situation and ask yourself some basic questions. Like I always ask myself those questions, you know. I calm down and ask myself, okay, you know what, Lola, what would you do if this situation was turned around? If this situation was for somebody else, how would you advise the person? Before we round up, there's a question somebody sent in. And it's a question I think I wanted to ask you. And the person was the fact that, I mean, we're going back to this Western world thing again. She, she says but she thinks the Western world is looking at Africa as a different point of view, and that we Africans, we don't try to change it. She says, for example, when Africans go to go overseas to work, we are looked at as immigrants, okay? But when a white person comes to Africa to work, they are looked at as expats. Which is true, anyways. No, it's true. Let us be fair, it's true. I mean, what do you feel about that? It's true. I didn't realize it, but it's true.
Thank you, Lola. I can relate with that, having been in the oil and gas sector. When we went way back then, there was that dichotomy, but we changed the language. Don't forget, my job was managing global diversity and ensuring inclusion. They called us impacts, and the other ones were expatriates, but I went as a Nigerian expatriate, so we made sure that was clarified. I wasn't going to learn from anybody, because part of what happened and that led to that notion was because these guys had the head start in that sector, and so they had the knowledge, and when they came here, they were training our people, so our people were learning, and when they went, they were not deemed on the same pedestal. But when I went to do a real job, I wasn't going there to learn, I was delivering value, and a few other people, I think I was a pioneer in that respect, and so a few other people came along, and we changed the narrative, so you're not called Nigerian expatriates to the U.S., and vice versa. Yeah. But again, it goes back to what I said earlier on. Whoever is controlling the gates, whatever gate that is, will be the one to shape the narrative. So we owe it to ourselves. And that's where China has done a good enough job in the last two decades to really, really change the narrative and showcase. They showed the world when they did the Beijing Olympics what they were capable of. They built, most of the cranes of the world were in China building things, and they did it in record time and gave a good testimonial of themselves. That's what we have to do. The narrative is changing gradually, but it's changing on the basis of private citizens who are doing well in fintechs and all the other things relating to IT. So everybody now knows Africa is the future. Unfortunately, a lot of our governments are not complementing what we're doing. Rather, they are creating the tailwinds that we are flying against. And that's what we've got to do. We've got to make sure when we do have a chance to make our votes count, it's those who get it that must be there, or we help them to get it and help them with the narrative. That's what's got to happen, because the average individual can do very well, but if the government policy is bad, it makes nonsense of what you're doing. And you're not the one who's going to be sitting with the Chinese government or the European Union or the US government. It's going to be those your government people. And if they don't know their left from their right, or they don't know enough, they're going to run rings around them. So that's part of the space that we've got to also look at. But individually, Africans are doing very well now. Businesses are coming out. Innovations are coming out. And we all owe it that our social media platforms should not be so much about the latest song and that. That's okay. It's an interest. But let's make sure we're very intentional about some of the things we post. It's shameful that some people are still in the Western world and they think Africa is one country. Or they don't realize that we have almost the same smart homes as they have elsewhere. We do similar things as elsewhere, because it fits the stereotype to continue to show images of our rural areas and of disease and stuff, but nobody then looks at all the other feats. And maybe we don't have enough of those examples to really stand toe-to-toe with those ones, but at least let's celebrate the few that we have while we don't play games or deny the fact that we still have some issues in some areas.
Well, I totally agree with you, but at the same time, I think it's an individual thing. I remember, when people ask me, for example, in South Africa, things like, initially I used to get a little bit irritated, but I don't get irritated very much. I find it very amusing now when people ask me questions like, where did you learn to speak English? And I always, I'm always very happy to answer that question. Like my children would say that, Mom, you're always so happy, like they pricked you. And I'm always like, oh no, I didn't learn it. And they go, oh really? I'm like, yeah, I didn't learn to speak.
It's my mother tongue.
It's my mother tongue. Exactly. That's how I always told them. I was English is not my mother tongue. I was colonized by the British, so we speak English. It's my first language. And they go, oh really? And I'm here, you know, and I say it in such a very demeaning manner that I send the message down to them that, you know what, and another thing I always say to them mostly is, yes, I'm black. I'm actually very black, and I'm proud. I'm black and proud. But guess what? My brain is not black. It's very clear. So I can think. So you see, when we as individuals start to push these things out, I think, as especially Nigerians, one thing I've noticed that is a trend in Nigeria is, I was just talking about it today with somebody, that we push the negative so much. And at times I ask myself, what are we gaining by pushing the negatives? But again, I've come to realize that that is what life is all about.
Yeah. I mean, Lola, you're right. I mean, even with Westerners, I never got angry. I had tons of patience. For me, it was always like a learning moment, a coaching moment, and a learning moment for that person. On my part, a coaching moment, and then for them, a learning moment. I knew there were some people I worked with who were lazy, who wanted to either abbreviate your name or call it something. I'm like, you're not serious. If you can call Schwarzenegger, you can definitely call Olatunji. So don't you dare try to change my name into something else. So I had tons of patience. And because of the job I was doing, you just have to step back and help them, because many of them are blissfully ignorant. So there are a few that are malicious, but many, or maybe yes, I can say most, are just blissfully ignorant. So it's a learning moment. Oh, Africa is a nation of almost 50. It's a continent of almost 50 nations, rather. So you let them understand, and this and that. And the population is like this, and how, you know, especially because Africa is rich. It just has been subjugated for long.
Well, I would say it's been a big pleasure talking with you. I mean, I wish I could go on and on and on and on.
Oh, wow. Yeah, it's gone already.
I know. I mean, time flies when you're having a good time, especially for me. This has been something I've been waiting for, because I've been wanting to have this discussion with this conversation with somebody that I could tweak the person's, you know, brain a little bit and let me see the ideas. Because, you know, people ask you questions like, oh, what do you feel about this? What do you feel about that? And sometimes your own opinion, at times you need to bring in somebody else's opinion and let the audience, I mean, the listeners, be able to see it from a different dimension. Well, we're going to be rounding up very soon. I mean, like, it's still Real Talk with Lola, and I've been talking with Tunji Dowu. One last question before I go, and I want it as quick as possible. As a psychologist, okay, and I know that in Nigeria that is like a trend now, what, as a religious person, as a realist, and someone that sees it out there, as I see a new trend now, it seems as if everybody seems to play around with the word depression. What's your take before we round up?
Thank you, Lola. In Nigeria, once we latch onto something, there's what the Americans call a domino effect.
Okay.
So you have a lot of us who will crowd in and really begin to take that topic, and people will bring the awareness. On one hand, it's good that we're talking about mental wellness, because it was something that used to be stigmatized and something we didn't talk about. When people have children with autism, Down syndrome, and all that, they often will hide them away. It still happens till tomorrow. And sometimes we didn't really know what was wrong with us when we acted in funny ways, and we couldn't decode it. So there's been an increase in knowledge around that topic. So that's good. On the other hand, I also think, because of social media, that's one of the parts about social media that I don't like. People put too many things out there. And I often will tell some of the young ones, I write to them on the side, I said, have some secrets. Not everything gets to be seen on social media. And some of the best things in life don't make it to social media. Have some secrets. Keep some of these. Now, people are, on one hand, more comfortable to talk about their mental wellness. But on the other hand, I think they're too quick, even when they have not been clinically diagnosed, to attach the label in that regard. And people have to be careful how they do that, because there's still stigma around some things, and you have to be sure you are comfortable, you have the mental strength to go out there and say that. It's good to own it, because it can help another person, but also be mindful and be sure you're sharing appropriately. But we have that bandwagon effect, that domino effect, that once we latch into something, by the sheer numbers, about close to 200 million officially, we all begin to talk about that and everybody begins to own it. So you don't become a pioneer on anything for too long in Nigeria. People will jump on it very quickly, even if it's going to be copies. So that's part of what I think is happening. It's good that the awareness is increasing, but it's also important that people have it diagnosed properly and people don't attach labels anyhow. But the other thing also, and I try not to generalize about this, the millennials, but people have challenged that maybe they are too quick to attach certain labels to what they felt parents and grandparents managed on their own. I'm not going to agree with that 100% because some of those were not known or diagnosed properly or they were denied. But on the other hand, these guys also need to be able to ensure that it's professionals that talk about some things and not use that as a clutch to explain many things away, almost everything away.
Thank you, thank you, thank you so much. I mean, I was there. I would have, like I said, I would have loved to go on and ask more questions. But unfortunately, like you said, time flies when you're having a good time. Thank you so much for taking out your time to come on my talk program. It's been a very lovely 1 hour with you. I mean, it flew just like that. It's been a lovely 1 hour with you. And I hope
thank you soon, for having me.
Yeah, I hope soonest I'll be able to bring you back. This has been Real Talk with Lola on Spirit of Nigeria Radio and Life Radio 107.5 FM Ibadan. And I've been talking with no other person but my big brother, my friend, my realist, someone I can always, you know, knock heads with, Tunji Idowu. Thank you so much for that.
Thank you, Lola. Thank you for having me. Thank you for all that you and Spirit of Nigeria are doing. It's amazing what you've done in 1 year. Thank you.
Thanks. Thanks.
Spirit of Nigeria Radio, bringing Nigerians in diaspora up to speed.